Genesis chapter 11, and we're going to pick it up in verse 27. But for a lot of you this morning, you've come to church and you've exercised a lot of faith on your way here. When you got up this morning, if you're like me, you went into the bathroom and you turned on the shower, and you had faith that hot water was going to come out. It's always a sad day when someone has got there before you and has taken all the hot water. You had faith when you went downstairs and you turned on the kettle that hot water was going to come and you could have your coffee to get you going in the morning, to get you ready and motivated for church. You had faith that you went out to your car, and then when you put the key on or you put the plastic thing into the front, depending on how modern your car is, that the engine would start and that there was petrol in the car and that you'd be able to drive to church. And growing up in a pastor's home and being around missionaries and being at Bible college, there can be quite a few issues with cars, especially older cars, perhaps a car that someone's given you. And I remember when I was younger and I would be in cars with some missionaries, and every time we would go on a journey with the missionaries, we would all stop and pray in the car. I don't know if you've had that experience. I'm not mentioning their names because some of you would know them. And we would pray that the car would start and that it would get us to where we were going. Well, I had my own car experience, but Jenny and I did. We borrowed someone's car in America, and we were hoping that this car was actually better than ours, so that's why we borrowed it. And you could drive anyone's car in America if you have insurance, not like here. And so we borrowed this car, and we were making this big journey on the 8-lane freeways, and we were driving along. It was late. It was about 10 o'clock at night, completely pitch dark. All you have is lights on the freeway. And then we're driving along about 70 miles an hour. I always keep in the speed limits. You would believe that. Driving along 70 miles an hour, and all I heard was poof. And the car just started going nuts, and it wasn't just my driving. And I thought, have we hit ice, or what has happened? And suddenly I had to sort of steer my way over to the hard shoulder. And we eventually stopped after about 200 or 300 yards because I couldn't hit the brake. You see, what had happened was my right front tire had completely exploded. Driving in pitch black on a freeway with cars flying. There's no fast lane there. They're all fast lanes. And there's cars flying. They undertake you. They overtake you. And by God's amazing grace, I was able to get across. And I was able to get into the hard shoulder. And just the car gradually slowed down with no acceleration. But you see, I had faith that the car would take me there. But you see, in that journey from one point to the other, there was obstacles and there was problems. And there was issues with our car. And in the story that we're going to look at this morning, Abraham is on a journey of faith with God. He's trying to get from one point to the other. God is starting to do something new in his life. The first 11 chapters of Genesis, if you've been reading it in your E100, apart from Genesis maybe 1 and 2, things have been a disaster. Chapter 4, Cain's killed his brother. Noah then gets drunk. Then the people in Genesis chapter 11, they want to build a tower up to the sky and they want to make themselves this big idol. Things are not going well, but God is going to start a new beginning with his people. The first 11 chapters, disobedience, murder, deception, drunkenness, nudity, and rebellion. You only have to turn on your BBC website or in the news and you see what's happening in Egypt. Rebellion, war, strife, problems. And this is what's happening in the book of Genesis. So if you're taking notes, there's going to be three ways God blesses his people on the journey of faith. Three ways God blesses his people on the journey of faith. Firstly, God chooses his people where they're at. Firstly, God chooses his people where they are at. And that comes from chapter 11, verse 27. If you look, if you kind of scan chapter 11, you'll kind of see as you were reading this week that the people are starting to decrease in age. You need some guy who lived 800 or 900 years, and then some guy who lives 600 or 700 years, some guy lives 400 or 500 years. So the sin that's happened in Genesis 1, 2, and 3 is now filtering through the people. And so people aren't living as long. There's problem, there's strife. God is going to have to do something new with his people. What is God going to do? You see, God chooses his people where they're at. Look at Genesis 11, verse 3. You'll see where the people are at. You say God chooses people, but where are the people at? Genesis chapter 11, verse 3. They said to each other, come, let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens, so that we might make a name for ourselves, not be scattered over the face of the whole earth. Does that not sound a little bit like the culture that you and I live in? Let's make a name for ourselves. Let's make ourselves great. We can do whatever we want to be. We can be whoever we want to be. We can worship ourselves and our own desires and our own goals. And here it's happening in Genesis 11. They don't want to be scattered all over the earth. They want their own centralized kingdom to be their own rulers and their own governors with their own power. But you see, God is coming to do something new. He's coming to choose Abram where he's at. You say, where was Abraham? Here's the people. They're building this massive thing up to the sky to make a name for themselves. Where was Abram? Abram was in Ur of the Chaldeans. He was in Ur of the Chaldeans. It was a very civilized place. It had a great library. It had many great mathematical minds. It was almost like a great metropolis of learning. And so this wasn't some backwater place. This was a place where it was good to live. Abraham lived a comfortable life with his friends and his family. And then you say, well, where was Abram spiritually? Where was he in the journey of faith with God? Had he started? Had the car got out of the journey? Had he started? Where was he? Joshua 24 verse 2 says this. Joshua reflecting on Abram's life. Joshua said to all his people, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Long ago, your forefathers, including Terah, the father of Abraham and Nahor, lived beyond the river and he worshipped other gods. But I took your father Abram from the land beyond the river and I led him on the journey of faith through Canaan. So where do we find Abram? We find Abraham as an idolater. We find Abraham and he's worshipping other gods. He has no desire for the true and the living God. And isn't that a picture of your salvation? If you're a Christian today, God at one time in his life came and shows you exactly where you were at. In fact, the book of Isaiah says that Abraham literally lived in a pit in the ground, spiritually speaking. He had no desire to serve the true and the living God, but here God comes and chooses Abraham exactly where he was at. Adam and Eve wanted to worship themselves and be like God, knowing good from evil, and that didn't satisfy them. Then Cain killed his brother Abel because he worshipped his own happiness more than the living God. Then in Genesis 6, the men on earth chose to marry whoever they wanted or whatever woman looked good to their eyes, yet again worshipping the creature over the Creator. See, that's what's happening in Genesis. People are worshipping themselves as the creature instead of God, the Creator. Then in Genesis 11, the people of the earth wanted to worship themselves again and wanted to build a tower up to the heaven. Against this is idolatry, worshipping anything else than the living God. Tim Keller, a famous writer, says this: the human heart takes good things like a successful career, love, material possessions, even their own family, and turns them into ultimate things. And then our hearts deify them as the center of our life because we think that they can give us significance, security, safety, and fulfillment. So whether it's happening in Genesis 11 and 12, where people are worshipping themselves more than they're worshipping God, I think we can all identify that with that in our own lives. That at one time in our life, God came and he chose us and he said, even though you're an idol worshipper, you love yourself or you love sex or money or career or prestige more than you love me, I'm going to choose you not because of anything good that's within you, but because of my purpose and plan. Because God chooses his people where they're at. But the problem for Abraham was, how much of his old life would he take with him? How much of his old life would he take with him? Or as I ask you this morning in your journey of faith, how much of your old life are you taking with you right now? What idols or spiritual addictions do you keep in the cupboard which no one knows about? You see, anything in our life can be an idol, and everything in our lives has been an idol in the past, perhaps in someone else's life. God is coming to choose Abraham, and he's coming to choose you and I where we're at. How old was Abraham, you say? Well, what stage was he at in his journey spiritually? How old was he? He was 75 years of age Now, if he lived here in Bangor, he would have been a good 10 years into his pension. He would have had his free train and bus pass. He would have been settling down to life, going out in his walks. But you see, Abraham was just approaching midlife. He goes on to live 175 years of age. But here's God, and he's coming into this man in his midlife, and he's saying, I've got a new purpose, and I've got a new plan for your life. I'm going to give you a new beginning, and I'm going to start something different in your life, Abraham. See, God had chosen Abraham. Secondly, God calls his people to obedience. And now we're going to pick up the text in verse 1 of chapter 12. God calls his people to obedience. Look at verse 1 of chapter 12. The Lord said to Abram, leave your country, your people, and your father's household and go to the land that I will show you. Abraham speaks, is spoken to by God. Can you imagine this? That here's this man, he's living in the Ur of Chaldeans. It's a metropolis of activity. There's loads of good stuff happening. There's loads of mathematical and intellectual minds. And it's the place to live in at this time. And then suddenly, Abraham in his daily life, suddenly this God speaks to him. What must that have been like? That God speaks. And suddenly the first 11 chapters of Genesis are going to be rescued by a speaking God who's not finished with mankind. He's going to come and he's going to choose this man, Abram, who there was nothing good within him. He was an idolater and worshipped other gods. And God was going to come and say, Abraham, I've got my finger on your life. And through you all the nations of the earth are going to be blessed. Because it's my plan and it's my purpose for a new beginning. But would Abraham obey? Would Abraham obey? The faith to which we are called is not a faith in a plan, but a faith in a person, Jesus Christ. The faith to which you and I are called is not a faith in a planet, but a faith in a person. Much more important than where Abraham was, God was concerned with who Abraham was. Do you get that? Much more important than where Abraham was, that he was in the Ur of the Chaldeans, but God was more concerned with who Abraham was. And in whom Abraham trusted. God is not so nearly concerned about where he finds us geographically this morning. He's concerned about our godliness. He's concerned about our godliness. About our relationship with him in the journey. He says to Abraham, here's the start of his relationship with him. Just like when God chose us to become a Christian in our past. He says, Abram, leave your country. Verse 1. This is an imperative command. Abraham, don't mess around with this one. Don't try and go back and forth with me in this one. You must leave your country, Abraham, if you want to start this journey of faith. As it was read to us earlier by Raymond, Hebrews 11 verse 8 says this. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went. Even, and listen to these words, even though he didn't know where he was going, by faith he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. Abraham lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him. Why did he do this? Verse 10 tells us of Hebrews 11. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. He was looking forward to the city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. Can you imagine yourself if you were in the sandals of Abraham and God is not silent. He's a speaking God. He comes, he's going to do something new. And he's speaking to Abraham. He's saying, you've got to leave all this. In fact, you've got to leave it now. What would your response have been? Would you have gone? Would you have started this journey of faith with God? You see, if Abraham's faith had been based on feelings, he never would have gone. And whatever God is speaking to you in your life, and he's asking you to perhaps step out in faith for you, if you're going to base that on your feelings, you might not do it. In fact, you probably won't do it. Faith is not based on feelings. Faith is based on the promises of God. Why do we not often want to step out for God? Why do we not want to move in that next step on our spiritual journey? Why don't we want to do it? Because I think a lot of us, and I include myself in this, we're comfort lovers. We love our comfort. We like our lives where it is at the moment. We like just the amount of things we've got on at the moment. We love to have control as well. Control of our environment, control of our things. But you know, the amazing thing is when you say, Jesus, I want to follow you. I want to give my life to you. I know you've chosen me where we've at. You're choosing me to obey. It's actually His journey and it's not yours. Abram, I've chosen you as an idolater. And I'm going to tell you where to go. And it's exactly the same for us. If you want to be a follower of Jesus Christ, He says, pick up your cross and not follow your friends or your family, but follow me. If anyone wants to gain his life, he will lose it for me. So the journey of faith is God's plan. And He's more concerned about who we are than necessarily our geography. He was asking Abraham to have a complete separation from his past. From his idolatry, from his sin, from his circumstances. And he gave the New Testament believers a promise. I love this. And you say, Johnny, I'm in a new situation. I'm feeling God's asking me to step out. I feel God, there's a certain circumstance in my life and I don't know how I'm going to step out that next step in the journey. And God gave this great promise to New Testament believers in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5, he says to those in the journey of faith, never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. So we can say with confidence, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What can man do for me? You're struggling on the journey of faith. You're struggling in your family life. You're struggling in your job this morning. You're struggling in this church this morning. That is God's promise to you. Never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. So we can say with confidence, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. And then you think, well, what about the world? What about my circumstances? Then it says, what can man do to me? Look at Genesis chapter 12, verse 2. Look at this wonderful promise. You see, the promise is not based on feelings. It's based on God Himself and His character. And as you go through these two verses with me, look at all the personal language that refers to God and Him being the one that's going to do it. Verse 2, I will make you into a great nation. And I will bless you. And I will make your name great. And you will be a blessing. All of these things that God says in chapter 2 would have been on the mission statement and the vision and values of an Oriental monarch. This is what you would have wanted at this time in life. It's like a businessman or a business sets out its goals or objectives to be the top of the tree, to be the new Microsoft or to be the new Apple. All of these verses and promises that God was giving would have been on their vision statement of an Oriental monarch. They were going to be a people. They were going to be a nation. They were going to have a common land. They were going to have a common language, a common government. They were going to be a strong representation of God in the world. Look what he says in verse 3. God continues to speak to Abram. I will bless those who bless you. And whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you. Now, in your E100 readings, this last part of verse 3 is one of the foundation stones that you need to think about. Look at the end of verse 3. It's so important. As you read your Bible, you can't take this bit of the Bible out. Look at the last number of words in verse 3. And all peoples on the earth will be blessed through you. That is the reason you sit here this morning. That the blessing wouldn't just be for Israel, that it wouldn't just be for this one nation, that one day through the seed line of Abraham, there would come a man who would be born in a virgin, who would be born in Bethlehem, and his name would be Jesus. And he would save his people. So the missionary mandate for the church just doesn't start in Matthew 28 and say, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. It actually goes way back to Genesis chapter 12 and the end of verse 3 where it says, all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. Through Abraham's genealogy and his seed line, the Savior of the world is going to come. And so as you go through your E100, you need to put down a stake at Genesis chapter 12, verse 3, and see the redemptive story and the redemptive plan of God, where He's saving His people and He's bringing the people to Himself. Because He not only chooses, but He calls. He's calling His people to Himself. Note the stark contrast between Genesis chapter 11 at the beginning and the start of Genesis chapter 12. And here you have all these guys and perhaps women crowded together in Genesis chapter 11. They're trying to build this big tower up to the heavens. God literally comes down, and in my picture, I almost have God like peering over to see what they're doing. It's kind of what the Bible taught. He's peering over to see what they're doing. And then they say, "Let us make a name for ourselves." And yet, Abraham is told by God, "I will make a name for you." They say, "Let us," and God says, "I will." Because it's God's plan on the journey of faith. It's interesting to note that Genesis 11 was the confusion of the languages. And I have to be honest, when I was at Bible college and I was studying Greek and Hebrew on a Saturday afternoon when all I wanted to do was to play sport, I used to think about Genesis 11 and these people allowing God to come and confuse the languages. So frustrating to sit there and go, "I have no idea what this means. I am so confused. I am so frustrated." And you just think back to Genesis 11 going, if they just hadn't built this thing up to the sky, maybe there wouldn't be the confusion of the languages. And I used to be so frustrated and sit there and think, I just wish that chapter hadn't been there. But you know, if you fast forward the tape, about 2,000 years, you get the Pentecost. And you remember the Holy Spirit comes in power, and there they're all gathered in the upper room, and then the men step out from that upper room, and they speak in other languages. Because in God's redemptive plan, which we'll see later in E100, it was a time for the gospel to go forth to all nations. There, the confusion of the languages was blessed again by God. They could speak to people from different parts of the world and they could tell them about Jesus, and 3,000 were added to their number that day because it's God's plan on the journey of faith. You say, "But this sounds really good, Johnny, but I have a problem, because when you were reading this earlier on in Genesis 11 verse 30, if you look at it, Genesis 11 verse 30, it says this, 'Now Sarai was barren.'" She had no children. So this sounds very grandiose, you know, there's going to be a great nation and a blessing and a land and a seed and everything's going to come to you, Abraham. You're going to be the most blessed man in the world. And then you go, "Okay, time out. Do you have any kids to carry on this blessing?" Nah, she was barren. What was God going to do? Look at verse 4. Abraham continues to walk out in obedience, even though he doesn't know the details of the plan, even though perhaps he doesn't understand where God is going to lead him. So Abram left, verse 4, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out for Haran. Verse 5, he took his wife Sarah, his nephew Lot, and all the possessions that he accumulated and the people they had acquired in Haran. And they set out for the land of Canaan and they arrived there. Notice there the people that accumulated. You think perhaps Abraham had gone into the local town and said to people, "By the way, the living God has just spoken to me. And He's just given me this amazing promise and this amazing blessing. And you're going to want to come with me on this journey of faith because this amazing promise has come." Perhaps. We weren't there. But whatever, people are coming with him. Verse 6, Abraham traveled through the land of Canaan as far as the site of the great tree of Moriah at Shechem. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. On the journey of faith, Abram comes to his first obstacle. He's obeyed. God's called him to obedience. He's obeying. He's walking out in faith. And then suddenly he comes to the great tree of Moriah, which was an idolatrous tree where the Canaanites come and worship. And all their idolatry was happening here. And so Abram, he comes to a stop on his journey. What would God do? It's almost as if perhaps you're buying a house in today's market, if you can actually sell your house, which would be miraculous in this economy. And it's almost as if he comes to his new house and he's sold up all of his property. He's got it all with him. The trucks have come. and they've loaded up all of his stuff and they're traveling along and they come to their new house and they've got the keys from the estate agent and they go to open their house and suddenly they realize there's squatters in the house. There's somebody else living in the thing I've been looking forward to the most. And suddenly there's a problem in his journey. What will God do? For you and I on the journey of faith with God, we will meet opposition. And the promises of God in the life of Abraham and our lives will not shield us from difficulty and trials. But we must cling on to those promises. You can imagine Abraham discouraged and downcast and angry, feeling foolish that he's brought his family and followers this far, only to have got to this point. Perhaps it was time to turn around. Sometimes we're a bit like that. We come to an obstacle and go, we'll just go back. Maybe God doesn't want us to go down this direction. And it was the same with the people of Israel when they left Egypt and they started meeting opposition on the journey of faith. They said, it was better back in Egypt in slavery. Let's just go back. But they didn't trust that God was taking them in the journey of faith. Would Abraham trust God? And just at his point of need, look what God does in verse 7. Look what God does in chapter 12, verse 7. The Lord appeared to Abram just when he needed it. Isn't that the case? God's often never early in our lives, but he's never late. God's often never early, but he's never late. And so Abraham, downcast, perhaps despairing, wanting to turn around in his journey of faith. And then verse 7, the Lord appeared to Abraham and said, to your offspring I will give this land. At chapter 12, verse 1, he had a voice from God or a speaking from God. And now he had an appearance of God. Isn't that amazing that God speaks and he wants to commune with his people? He didn't want to leave them dead and downcast in the first 11 chapters of Genesis. He's got a new beginning for his people. So what was Abraham's response? The second part of verse 7. So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. From there he went on towards the hills east of Bethel and pitched his tent. With Bethel on the west and Ai on the east, then he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. See that? On the journey of faith, he's calling upon God for the next step. Where do you want me to go, God? Where am I going to go next? I'm not going to go back. You've appeared to me. I've got strength and encouragement again. And I need to go forward. And he calls in the name of the Lord. And then verse 9, he knows where to go. Look at verse 9. Then Abram set out and continued towards the Negev. Thirdly, God forgives his people's disobedience. Verse 10 to 20. God forgives his people's disobedience. Just like you, Abraham, had problems. Just like you in your Christian life, perhaps this morning you've carried some of that idolatrous sin from when you became a Christian and you've still got it as baggage on your journey. God's asking you this morning to not be disobedient. To give it to Jesus Christ who can go on cleansing you from all unrighteousness and to help you to run in the journey, to walk faster, to run quicker towards holiness and godliness. But Abraham disobeyed. Look at verse 10. Now there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to live there for a while because the famine was severe. As he was about to enter Egypt, he said to his wife Sarai, I know what a beautiful woman you are. When the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Then they will kill me, but will let you live. Say, here comes the disobedience, verse 13. Say, you are my sister, so that I will be treated well for your sake, and my life will be spared because of you. This is a half-truth. And we all know as we read our Bibles that a half-truth is a lie. A half-truth is a lie when you look at the Word of God. And legally, she was his half-sister, but really, she was his wife. And so when you look at this, he is fearing and he's disobedient and he thinks, I'm actually not going to talk about God. If you notice, he didn't consult God to go down to Egypt. Remember, he went to the Negev, verse 9, he called upon the name of the Lord. Then verse 9, he went to the Negev. Then verse 10, suddenly he's going down to Egypt, but he didn't consult God. I think that's a lesson to all of us that on the next stage of our journey of faith, we need to consult God in prayer. We need to journal, perhaps our E100 notes. What is God saying to me on the journey? Writing things down, recording things so that we don't forget what God is saying to us over a period of weeks and months and years on the journey of faith. See, Abram was filled with fear that perhaps the blessing was at end.